How do we engage with an increasingly secular culture? The early church has some ideas for us. Hi, I'm Stuart Shepherd, and this is First Liberty Live. Thank you for liking and sharing our videos. You are an important part of this project. You help us reach new friends and new people, and we're grateful when you do that. And just wanted to say thank you right up front. Stephen Presley is Senior Fellow for Religion and Public Life with the Center for Religion, Culture, and Democracy here at First Liberty Institute. He's also Associate Professor of Church History at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky. And he's got a new book titled Cultural Sanctification, got a copy right here, Engaging the World Like the Early Church. Hi, Stephen.
Hello. Thank you, sir.
Congratulations on this. It's a big deal to publish a book.
Thank you very much. It's been a long road, but glad we're here.
Well, we are proud of you and thankful to have you as part of the team here and doing this level of work, because this is a significant bit of thought that you've put into this that hopefully will be not just telling people how to engage the culture, but the book itself will engage the culture. So we're looking forward to seeing that.
I hope so.
Your book made me realize something that I'd never really, it's obvious, but I never thought about it before, and that is when members of the early church woke up in the morning and stretched, they go to their front door and step out into the world, there is no Christian culture, because they were building it literally in real time right then. Set the scene for us. What was the world like as the first Christians stepped out and were trying to engage the culture?
Yeah, I think you begin to see it already in the book of Acts, of course, with all of the stories of the book of Acts. You have the apostles that are going out. They're trying to share the gospel. You think about Paul on Mars Hill, as he is engaged with pagan idols, pagan gods, and Paul is wrangling and wrestling with the philosophical world of their day. Just like that, on up through, even until Constantine in the 4th century, the Christians of the 1st through centuries are experiencing the same kind of engagement with paganism. And as we think about today, our lives and our jobs, they had professions, they had to get married, they had children, they had all the normal kind of activities of life. They had to do it only in a Roman Empire in which the dominant and predominant religion was paganism. Right. Infused with pagan idols, just like you see, like I said, in the book of Acts.
Yeah, I've gotten to stand on top of the Acropolis in Athens, look across to Mars Hill, and it occurred to me while I was standing there what it must have been like to be someone who has this idea about Christianity, and you go up there because that's where people talk about these yep. things, and you engage in the conversations.
Yep.
You quote in your book philosopher Charles Taylor, who wrote that a secular culture is, quote, a secular culture, quote, consists, among other things, of a move from a society where belief in God is unchallenged and indeed unproblematic to one in which it is understood to be one option among others and frequently not the easiest to embrace. Build out that thought for us from where you sit. What is a secular society?
Yeah, secularism and the term secular gets used in a variety of ways. Even Taylor talks about it historically. You can think about secular as that which is non-religious. So historically, there are times when the culture was Christian, to do an activity that was secular was to do something that was not involving the church. So it didn't necessarily have a negative connotation. But then today, the way Charles Taylor is describing it is a spectrum of moral views or moral positions in which now Christianity is just one option among many. And as Taylor says, not always the easiest to embrace. And so we now have competing in a secular world. We have competing moral claims that are embedded within the fabric of our society.
I've really seen that in my lifetime. When I was a kid, it was still the World War II generation that was running things. And while someone may, as an individual, not have bought into Christianity, they wouldn't speak ill of it. And they seem to have, at least in public, a respect for it and express that. That's gone. That is completely gone from the culture. And young people today have no idea that just not that many years ago, it was different.
Yeah. So things have changed, and things have changed fast. And I think, we're starting to see even the work we do here at First Liberty defending religious people and defending religious institutions is a testimony to that. Things are changing fast. And the reality is the fabric or the mores of society no longer reflect Christian claims and exclusive Christian morality. And that is a world now we're waking up to and a world we're trying to deal with.
And that's the next question. As you look out through these lenses in 2024 at America, what are the telltale signs that you see in our culture?
Yeah, I even talk about in the book some of the differences between the ancient world and today. And one of the major differences is obviously in the ancient world, you can think about the book of Acts and then the first few centuries, as you said earlier, they're working from the ground up. And they're working and engaged. Several scholars talk about organic engagement. We're looking at the loss or the demise of Christian institutions. So among a lot of Christians, there's the sense of grief. There's a sense of loss, there's a sense of fear, where institutions, be it academic institutions, be it social institutions, you can think of all kinds of social or civic institutions, Boy Scouts, or all these sorts of things that were part of the fabric of the culture that now are taking a new turn in terms of moral diversity.
And we hear people say all the time, this isn't the world that I grew up in, things are different.
Yeah, and so you're grieving, a lot of Christians are grieving the loss of a Christendom, the loss of a society in which Christian mores were just assumed. And so in some ways, our challenge is almost slightly different, like as you described, waking up to a world that is not distinctively Christian anymore, at least not in the way it was, as you described historically.
And you explain in the book, we can be today pulled in two directions. The first is pull back from culture. We're going to hide in our churches, just do church activities. We're going to stay in our houses. We'll send our kids to Christian school, and we'll just completely remove ourselves from the larger culture. The other is what the legacy media likes to accuse us of, and that is we're going to go out and campaign for the culture war and create a theocracy and Christian nationalism. I see it on the news. Nobody knows what it means, but yet they always want to accuse us of it. You say there's another way. What's that other way?
Yeah, and I describe, when you look at again, it starts in the book of Acts. When you look at what Peter and Paul and the other apostles are doing, and then you get into the second and third century fathers, they're not pulled between those extremes. They're embedded in the world, and they're trying to live out their Christian faith while embedded in the fabric of society. Now, I use the language discernment, or a cultural discernment, because it does require prudential decisions about how much I am involved in certain things, or how do I put my kids in public school or private school? Those kinds of decisions that every Christian has to make today, that they weren't always making several years ago. And of course, again, this is why this work ties with what First Liberty is doing, is protecting the rights of individuals to be able to be active within the public square, carrying out and going into the public square with their Christian faith. In the early church, they were doing it not surrounded by a Christian culture. Today, again, we're wrestling between those tensions.
Not surrounded by a
Christian culture.
Go ahead and finish your thought.
Well, I mean, we're still pulled behind those temptations. And the early church should inspire us, I think, to remain embedded within the fabric, but using discernment to make wise decisions about our family, about our jobs, about our professions, about our activities within the public square.
Yeah. Very good. Yeah. I get the sense that this book is aimed in particular at pastors and church leaders. What are you hoping to reach? What message are you hoping to get through to them?
Yeah, one outreach that we have, the Center for Religion, Culture, and Democracy, the educational wing of First Liberty, has several outreach programs to undergraduates and to academics and to a whole variety, but I'm also working with pastors. And so we see pastors in that tension you put. I mean, they're there standing in the gap between those who are Christians who are embedded within the fabric of the culture. And so this book in particular, I hope it finds traction among Christian leaders and among pastors to cast a vision of hope that we can remain committed to the Christian faith and we can find ourselves embedded within the fabric of society.
You've hit on this theme in a couple of different ways here, but I'd like to draw it out a bit. And that is, we need to be able to relate to the culture without being absorbed into the culture. How do we navigate that?
Yeah, that's such a great question. I even talk about cultural absorption. That's one of the terms I use in there.
Yeah.
And I draw out this image of discernment, and I even walk through examples in the early church of Christians trying to make decisions about what profession to have, whether or not to go to the gladiatorial games, whether or not to go to the entertainments, what kind of job. If I'm an artist, can I make art that is tied to making idols? These kinds of questions that are not entirely unlike the kinds of questions we're asking today, even in the business world, about moral decisions. And so I try to use the language discernment,
mm-hmm.
But it also means that we might need to have a clear understanding of Christian morality and Christian doctrine, so that when we find ourselves in the public square, we find ourselves at work, we're falling back upon good, solid biblical teaching to be able to make wise decisions. Doesn't mean, you know, every Christian's going to make the best decision in every circumstance, but that we're relying on the scriptures and we're relying on our Christian doctrine and Christian morality to make those prudential decisions.
You're already answering this next question, but I want to go ahead and draw it out. And that is, as we move this conversation into the school board meeting, into the workplace, into the classroom, into the corner grocery store, the places where if we live out our faith, people are going to be rolling their eyes, giving us a side eye, you know, kind of going, yeah, like, get this guy.
Yeah.
How do we function in that negative environment where people seem to be so tilted against us and everything we're doing?
You know, the book, the last chapter is entitled Hope. And I spend that whole last chapter talking about the hope that Christians have of the life of the world to come. And so I talk a little bit about in that chapter about the confidence that comes through rest and assurance in our faith in Christ and in the hope of Christ's return and the hope of Christ's come. Because when I look at the early church, you can already see it in the book of Acts, but when I look at the early church, they have a confidence that comes through truly believing in the gospel, truly believing Christ is on his throne, truly believing Christ is going to come again in glory. So they're not marked by fear. As you know, the scriptures often say, fear not, one of the most common injunctions. And so one of the lessons I learned, it was almost for me and my wife and my own family, is working through some of the scriptures in these early Christian texts has taught me, and I saw the importance of confidence, and not arrogance, but a level of confidence in the gospel and hope and assurance of the Lord's return. And so when we find ourselves, whether it be in the school board or the grocery store, sitting to get our hair cut, conversations about the gospel, we can have them with the assurance that Christ is on his throne, that the Lord is coming, that Christ is coming again in glory. Yeah.
It often occurs to me that the people who seem to be at the greatest disagreement with us are just one thought away from agreeing with us. I mean, they speak more confidently than they're thinking. Yeah. And when they see that kind of confidence, it can have a real impact.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. When you look at the early church, it's one of the great questions of the early church. How did we go from sort of 11 guys or 12 guys hanging out with Jesus to Constantine in the fourth century, where the West became predominantly Christian?
Yeah, at least officially.
At least officially, right? Yeah. Especially by the end of the fourth century. And scholars, you know, they wrestle with these kinds of questions, and you start to look at everything. There's not major revivals. There's not these dramatic experiences. It's just the slow, steady, organic embeddedness of Christians in society, encouraging others to take hold of that faith.
Very good. It's winsome because it's true. Yep. Anything else you'd like to share before I let you go? I've really enjoyed this conversation.
I hope especially that this, I hope everyone will read it, but especially Christian pastors and leaders.
Yeah.
I know many of them are caught right now and struggling with how to respond in this cultural moment. I know they have congregants that they look at and they from the pulpit every Sunday, and they see them and they see the struggles that people have today. And I hope that this book, in some small measure, gives them some things to think about as they think about cultural engagement today.
Very good. Stephen Presley, we're glad you're here working with us. And I appreciate the fact that you've dedicated the gifts that God has given you and the skill set that you have to doing this kind of work, because it's so needed. It is vital, and we're grateful to have you as part of the team here. Thank you for that.
Appreciate it. Glad to be here.
The book is Cultural Sanctification. It's available everywhere, even as you're hearing this interview right now. We can highly recommend it. And I really love the fact that you end with hope, because this could be a really depressing book otherwise, but it ends exactly where it ought to, because that's where we live. So again, Christian Cultural Sanctification, let me get the name right, by Stephen O. Presley. If you want to see religious heritage, the religious freedom in America defended, and you'd like to see the religious heritage of this nation defended, you can make that happen with your support of First Liberty Institute. Just look for the big red give button up at the top of our homepage. First Liberty is fighting for what matters most.